This is Wine and Dine in LA with Anush, where I talk about wine in a fun and approachable way and bring you all insights of the world of wine. Welcome back. This is Wine and Dine in LA with Anush. Today, my guest is Emily Saladino, writer, editor, and recipe developer. We have had such an amazing conversation already, and I cannot wait to continue where we left off. We were talking about developing recipes and how do professionals do that? You know, from a standpoint of a home cook, which I am, a mom, for me, developing a recipe is, I mean, I don't know what that is, but just basically taking a bunch of ingredients and throwing into a pot and then hoping that it's going to come out right. And then after first try, it could be good. And then you try again. So, but I just learned that that's not how exactly it happens. You have to have a structure. You need to have, Emily, help me out here. How do you do that?
Well, I mean, what you just described is how some of the world's most delicious dishes came about, right? Just throwing stuff together in a pan and seeing what happens. So, I mean, magic, alchemy can happen everywhere. But yeah, thinking about food through a sort of almost a mathematical way, right? Like thinking about the different elements of how we taste. And so we were talking about this, you know, this really incredible cookbook and a sort of concept that was developed by Sami Nosrat that's called salt, fat, acid, heat. So you're thinking about if you have a dish that has a lot of acid in it, you know, something like, I don't know, chicken that you roasted with lemon, right? You want to make sure that then you also have the other elements to balance it, to make sure that it doesn't taste too heavy from the fat, that it also has a little bit of salt to perk up the flavors. So you're thinking about food in this really elemental way of just the ways that our taste buds and our brains kind of comprehend it. And that all sounds so like intellectual, but like when you taste it, you know it, right? It's why peanut butter and jelly go well together, because you have something sweet and something savory together in one bite, right? So I think like it doesn't, so pizza works. And so I think, you know, if you start kind of looking at your favorite foods and thinking about why you like them, is it textural? Is it because you love having a crunch? Do you like having something really rich? Then it kind of helps you cook for the ways that you or your family or your community love.
Absolutely. I was, while you were describing, I was thinking yesterday, I haven't had a seaweed salad for a while. Ooh. And you know how there's like almost like plasticky looking seaweed, mm-hmm. but it's so delicious because it's seasoned so well and it has the sweetness and salt and acid and mm-hmm. the crunch too. And it also has like sesame seeds on there and mm-hmm. oil from the sesame oil. It's just a simple seaweed from ocean, but it tastes so good and it satisfies all your senses.
Yes. Oh, I love that. I love that.
So I have a question about, I would like to hear your opinion. Mm-hmm. As a someone who didn't grow up with Food Network, when I discovered Food Network, I was completely in love. I was not a big, and this is Food Network 15, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. I always was interested. I loved reading cookbooks when I was a kid. I just liked looking at the pictures for some reason. Yeah. But I cooked in Armenia. I can make lots of things, but I was never as passionate or as excited about cooking and different cuisines. In your opinion, how did Food Network has helped or changed American food culture and wine culture, for that matter?
Oh, so interesting. You know, it's really interesting. I do think for, especially if we're talking about this, as you say, like the Food Network of like 15, 20 years ago, like early aughts U.S. food culture is so different from where we are now. I think in the U.S. we've evolved a lot as like a culinary culture in the last 20 years. And I think for many people, the Food Network really opened them up to cooking beyond whatever their personal experiences were, right? Like maybe I grew up with barbecue, but I had never used a wok, or maybe I'd used a wok, but I'd never had American barbecue, right? Like there's that. But then I also think it got people thinking about food as culture in a way that the US is enormous. So I always hesitate to like make generalizations. We're a diverse nation and we're enormous. But I think for many people, from a sort of general cultural conversation, food wasn't always included. We talked about visual arts and music and, you know, theater and sports, and we didn't necessarily include food as like a sort of cultural output of ours. And I think many Americans still kind of struggle with that. But I would say that there's that early aughts period, whether it was through the Food Network or it was through subscribing to food magazines, shows like Top Chef and Chopped, and you know, all of those things kind of helped bring food into a cultural conversation in a very mainstream way that I hadn't seen it happen prior. And so it's exciting to me when I hear, full disclosure, I was never a big Food Network watcher, but you know what, my brother was. but I do think it's interesting, like there has been this huge sea change that has happened in the conversations that food tends to get included into over the last 20 years. And I think for many people, Food Network was a huge part of that.
For me, I'm a visual person.
Yeah.
I love to see how things are done. Because sometimes in the reading, you know, it's just, and it, for some reason, it reminded me of, I'm not sure if you are were into Friends, but when Rachel tries to make a trifle and the pages of the book are glued together or something gets stuck and she makes half its trifle and half of casserole or some meat dish or meatloaf. So, you know, I feel like, you know, with books sometimes, even though I love them, I have so many books, cookbooks, which I love, but sometimes that can happen. So for a new recipe, I love watching visually. And with Food Network, and I haven't watched Food Network for the longest time. I don't know what's even on there, but with the original chefs, they just were so excited for like Mario Batali, for me, like talking about, you know, Italy. And not just making Italian food, but also there were videos that he was showing of the country, of the food, how he was there. Like they would incorporate so much culture and so much authentic recipes, because everybody can make pasta and, you know, spaghetti and meat sauce, or, you know, buy a jar thing, which nothing wrong with that. I do that very quickly. But when you see how different regions in Italy, then you realize that Italian food is not just, you know, one type. And that's what I learned about those countries and et cetera through the network.
Yes. Oh, I love that. No, and you're right. You know, if you are a very like visual learner, or you're just someone who gets really inspired visually, like there's nothing quite like having whether it's television or photograph or whatever, you know, that can really help transport you. And, you know, I love what you said too about learning from cookbooks. I find that like so helpful in taking me into a food culture, as you said, like going beyond just, okay, this is a recipe for pasta, but why do we make pesto this way? And what are the components of it? And how did that come to be? I think contextualizing what we eat isn't a drag. I think it makes it so much more interesting, right? And it also makes it more approachable. Like it might seem like if you spend a bunch of time learning about why a recipe came to be, that would make it harder, but I actually think it opens it up. I think it makes it easier.
Absolutely. So growing up, we have neighboring, we still have Georgia. Mm-hmm. And Georgia is very famous for its khingalits, which is basically a dumpling. And I always thought that, okay, it originated in Georgia. But then the more I got exposed to different cuisines and etc., you realize that actually it's very similar to Chinese, like soup dumpling. And then you look at different cultures. Okay, then there is like, okay, these are boiled. Then there is like empanadas, which is again like, and it's like, this is so interesting. And then you realize that overall, we maybe pretty much have all same food.
Yeah, but, I love that.
Right? What is your take on that? I mean, has a someone who has gone through the school and reading and writing so much, what do you think of, like, let's say, for example, these dumplings, the dumpling story?
Yeah, no, it's so funny. I do think about that in terms of, like, if you grow up in parts of Eastern Europe, you might call it a pierogi. And if you grow up in parts of China, you might call it a bao, you know, and like, right, like it is so interesting to think of the ways that food does kind of, that these concepts, I guess, like have traveled even like millennia ago when we weren't sharing pictures of our toast on Instagram, right? Like I look at like La Maison and pizza, like these are similar entities. And they're not the same. And that's, I think, part of what makes it cool is like, it can be tempting to use it as a shorthand and be like, okay, tinkali is a dumpling, is a pierogi, is an empanada. And like, we're not saying that, but like the concept of folding bread around like a delicious filling, it does translate, right? Like shumai is different than tinkali, but like there's certain similarities there. And like, La Maison is different than, sorry for my accent, is different than pizza. And like, that's good too. Like it's kind of cool that we have these related concepts that people have found ways to make similar ingredients that are local to where they live taste delicious in very similar ways. I think there's something really cool about that.
Absolutely. It's fascinating. This is why I love living in the United States, because I mean, I came here a while ago and we were Armenia became independent and there was a lot of things coming in. But because of the war and blockade, you know, it took Armenia a little bit longer to get to the point. Now, when I go back, there is a Korean restaurant, there is Chinese restaurant, there is Japanese restaurant. But while I was there, for us, maximum there was Indian, because we have quite a large Indian community of students. And I loved Indian food, but I wasn't familiar with Korean. I wasn't familiar with Chinese. And when I went, like I said, I went to like Korean restaurant and they brought this mandu or the kimchi, right? Pickles. It's like, okay, this is such an integral part of their diet. It's fermented vegetables. And we use a lot of pickles too. And typically like in the winter, because during the winter, we don't have fresh vegetables. So we would pickle all the vegetables for the winter time. So, so many similarities and yet differences. And when you think about it, you're like, wow, so cool.
Yeah. I love that. And, you know, and it's a nice thing. I think that like, you can travel and you can experience food that is nothing like you've ever seen and tasted before. And you can also have the opposite experience where you're like, wait a second, like I grew up pickling too, you know? And like, I think that's a really cool thing about food. And that's one of the things I love is that, you know, I buck a little bit at when people are like, it's the ultimate connector. Cause I'm like, well, we as the people still have to do the work, like share a meal and be like, boom, problem solved. But I do think that there is this incredible capacity for connection there. And it does depend on us as the individuals. Like, how are we going into this meal with like open minds, or are we going in expecting it to solve the world's problems? But I think that you can learn so much about, you know, cross-cultural similarities and differences, and both of those things can be really enlightening.
It's a bone broth, and you eat it what? With garlic and pickles, and they eat it with garlic and kimchi. And so you're thinking the only difference is that we use lavash, dried lavash, to put it in, and they use rice to put it in. And you're thinking, how Korea is so far from Armenia? How can we have the same breakfast for the thing? But then when you think about it, okay, you are not the only two countries. There is other countries too, because that was the most nutritious thing, I guess, you can eat in the morning.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah. Go on. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say it's so like healthy and it's full of calcium. It's full of collagen. It's amazing. And and they also drink with it too, alcohol, and so do we. It's the best way to start your morning.
I love that. No, it does. It sounds so like hearty and satisfying. What a delicious breakfast.
Yeah, it's so good. So this time when you were in LA, I'm so glad we got to meet and hang out. I wanted to ask you, since it's Wine and Dine in LA, And I know your time was limited. You didn't get a chance to go to lots of places, but anything memorable food-wise, restaurant-wise, that just grabbed your attention, that's something very like LA or very specific to here?
Oh, thank you so much for asking. You know, I had such a great experience. I think LA is one of the like coolest food cities in the world. It's so diverse. It's also, you know, I think it coming from New York, it's so enormous. It has such a big footprint. And so I loved, I know it was such a pleasure to get to meet with you and drink some incredible Armenian wines together. It was my first time going to Koreatown in LA, actually. It's funny that we're talking about Korean food. And I had some really, really delicious food there. And I also really love like in, you know, throughout LA, there are these sort of enclaves of different immigrant communities. And so they have then created their own, you know, Angeleno versions of those foods. But then it can also be really exciting. I went with a former colleague to a Thai breakfast joint and to just get to have, you know, yeah, like I had not had the, you know, there's a dish that's like a congee, like a Chinese congee, to just have that in the morning on like a kind of, when I was in LA, it was during like a breezier rain.
I know. I don't know what happened to LA weather.
Yeah, right. I was going to say, that's what everyone expects, but I think having, you know, I'd not had a Thai version of congee before. And so getting to have that in, again, I was in Thai town. So I think that is the thing about LA is like, there's just so many neighborhoods with so many great things to try, you know, and that like, I could go to the same block that I was in, you know, the Thai neighborhood and experience, you know, 17 other types of breakfasts. And so I think that's kind of what makes me forever excited about Los Angeles. I just think it has a lot of different food scenes. There isn't an LA food scene. There's so many.
Absolutely. So true. You know, going back to Korean is one of my absolute favorite cuisines. And my Korean friends, they tell me sometimes that you're more Korean than us because I make kimchi and I just love it. And they tease me. They're like, you were Korean in your past life. So when my friends ask me, they're like, okay, we want to go to Korean. I'm like, well, which where should we go? I'm like, okay, well, you need to tell me, are you going to go for dumplings? Are you going to go for soup? Are you going to go for barbecue? And they look at me like, who are you? I'm like, well, you have to know, or like for the cold noodles, you have to know, like, you know, you have to know which one is the best place. And then that's where you go for your particular craving.
Right.
And it's true for all the communities with Armenian food. We have, okay, the best place for the kebab, the best place for mante, the best place for like the Soviet Armenian food that, you know, it's like, if you are nostalgic about those times, you can go and be in that, you know, just you feel like you're back in USSR, like literally with the conversations and music. So it is a very diverse and very exciting place to be for food and wine too. We didn't talk much about wine today, but it's okay.
No, it's true though. It is. It is such a, it's an exciting city in that way. And I love what you said too about being like, okay, so if you're in the mood to explore Korean cuisine, what specifically? Because I do, I think that kind of what we were saying about recipes, it opens it up. It might sound like it's going to make it more confusing, but it actually opens it up to you.
So true. So next time when you are in LA, if you want to explore some of the Korean or like more narrowed down, like dumpling place or soup place,
yes,
I'd love to be your tour guide, unless you have someone who is even more like into the food. And I'm sure there are people. Emily, I don't know how the time went by so fast. Like I said, I had a bunch of more questions, but we will leave that for another time. I wanted to thank you for this wonderful conversation, and I just want to go and cook something right now.
Anush, thank you so much for having me, and that sounds lovely. I would love to dine with you in LA, whether it's dumplings or soup or anything, at any time.
Looking forward to it. Bye-bye.
Bye.